going down the railroad track. It makes me feel so doggone blue to listen to that old smokestack. Drivers are rolling on, leaving me here behind. Give me back them good old days and let me ramble down the line. That lonesome train, I love to hear the whistle blow. She's taking the sun and leaving the rain and making me want to go. I've got the blues, longing for her company. Many miles from where I am to the only one for me. It's so lonesome here, waiting for the manifest. I hope that engineer is kind enough to let me be his guest.
This is Dave Monk, your Prairie Monk, WAFT Champaign 90.1 on your FM dial. And David's not on the board today. He's not so well. So we're doing the best we can with Lemon and Monkey and Talus. I want to say that at 3 o'clock we will have Pocket Prairie haircut when the dead material dies over winter. The prairie comes through that. Sometimes when you burn in wintertime, it'll come through very well. But sometimes you don't always want to burn every year. You may want to burn every 3 years or 5 years. It depends on the amount of litter that accumulates. If you're on a reconstituted prairie, you may not have enough litter from the... This is not litter trash cans. This is litter and native plant material that accumulates. If you have a reconstruction prairie, it might not have enough natural litter to provide for a good fire. It's a sort of scudsy fire. It's not one that's not a bonfire. And you know, so sometimes in that situation, if you feel a need for a burn, you can put hay on top of the prairie to give you a nice scudsy fire to remove litter in certain places. Some plants will generate more litter than others. But at 3 o'clock we'll have couple of us will work and just remove some human litter, but also the overlying litter, especially grasses. Grasses tend to fall. They fall in an interesting manner, a predictable manner, and they're quite beautiful, but it depends on the eye of the beholder because it looks untidy in a way. Some plants stay up very vertical, and you can work around them. Monarda stays up. Switchgrass stays up. little blue stem stays up. So we will probably leave some of the prairie there. The site is in jeopardy because the next door building that owns the pocket prairie and has allowed us to use it for 30 years is being remodeled, and the pocket prairie will become a place for restaurant tables in the open and music, and it's part of gentrification of downtown. And we're glad to see it happen because that building has been empty for a long while, and so there's been a lot of construction there, and we're part of it, and we have to gratefully get out of there. But it might be that with landscaping and some contact with planners, we might be able to just have a little bit of prairie left in a nook or a corner that will be part of the history of this location. But 3 o'clock this afternoon, even just a half an hour would be helpful if you're there, and it might be a learning process for you to know what we have to do with a small downtown pocket prairie, which has been very helpful in letting people know what a prairie forest ecosystem is, and it's a starter for taking people to the Pope Prairie or other prairies that are nearby, but, you know, 10 or 20 miles away, to look at a decent remnant prairie and reconstruction on a site that was used for agriculture. It's on the Bloomington Moraine, and we're pleased to have that site. So this has been a starter for there, but other sites too, on Winter Road, on Route 45, Lake Park, they're close prairies where we can teach and introduce people to the plants that they really haven't seen for many, many years. Many generations, actually. Two topics today. One is, let me get my notes. Two items. One is a reading program, which is a national reading program where young children are gathered up, and community people provide them with resources. It's called Read Across America, and I think it's all going on at the same day, same time. It obviously involves a lot of, perhaps as many as 60 or 70 local institutions, and we've been very lucky that we have a lot of support bodies. I started out to look at this by talking to a Rotary Club person, and she explained that this was a national level venue, may even be more than that. These things take off sometimes, and it was oriented to children from three to high school. It's and the booth spaces were designated whether this was for a third grader or a fifth grader, or perhaps an age group, or an interest. So the types of the facilities that they had, the subjects would be art and music, English, language, holidays, mathematics, science, social studies, history, sort of specialty items, world language, and different areas of interest. So you have subject matter interests, and you have resources that range from video, do activities like bouncing features inside a tent, or people reading stories. And so it was explained to me that there were books, and it's obvious that the local organizations had to fess up to buying books suitable for the age group that they were going to target. And there were cards, and so the child, usually with parents, or more than one child, would come to a site. It might be a song and dance on a stage. It might be sorting out some sort of facility that had been engineered by the local group that was of interest. The child gets a ticket, a little sticker, and it goes on a page, which when you get enough, you can go to a table loaded with books suitable for children and supervised, and that would be the reward for going through the a number of venues that were of interest. And they get a book to take home, and then get a bag to put the book in. And it's it was amazing how many families were there, how many children were there, and how many adults were there to read. Sometimes they might be multi-language people telling stories, people that have been part of the Rotary Club for many, many years. So I wandered around there some, and was rather grateful that we have a small mall that does rather wonderful things. If you go there often, you will find a group of people playing guitar in a corner. There will be people dancing or singing or meeting each other. And so this was one of those very early malls that closed the street, and was not as big as the malls that came later. They were rather huge, and so it has its moments of trying to survive as an economic body that sells items. But it has other characters. There's something like two or three churches there. There's some open space, which is a little disappointing because there's been some move out, and the Carl Clinic has moved in, and the co-op is there. There's exercise facilities and various other sites, lawyers, or it's adjacent to what used to be called Jumer's Hotel, and there's parking nearby, and it's near the farmer's market. So thank you to that mall for facilitating this sort of activity, and I appreciate all the children that came in to be there. The other thing that happened this week was two of us went to the Prairie State Conservation Coalition meeting in La Salle, Peru. It's Starved Rock State Park, and about 70 people I met there. Some of them are well-known conservation people. We were given a rundown of what Prairie State Conservation has been doing, and that's usual for an organization like that. There was some business of rollover of board members, so we were introduced to new board members. There was a listing of finances and how do we do this. And so I'm going to go through some of the things that we found at this meeting. It was a rainy trip to get there. It was raining like crazy, and Stavrock is by the river, and so many of the parking lots were flooded. As you went up onto the hill where the lodge is, there was no problem like that, but it made you realize that we have to deal with water, and lately a lot of us have been getting water in the basement, and the fields were absolutely saturated, so there was ponds of water on the roadside. But the meeting itself was excellent, and so I said something about the introduction of the organization and priorities that you would want to consider for the future. Then people dealt with the legislature. Fran Hardy, who is a leader in this, put together the Prairie State Conservation Coalition about 12 years ago, and he is from the Nature Conservancy, but prior to that he was a regional director for the Natural Resources Department, and so he has a lot of background in this sort of work. Had to do with Southern Illinois some. I think his background is from Southern Illinois. At least his education is there. But that is a sort of hotbed of natural history. It has nearness to Shawnee State Forest, and so quite a bit of botanical and other environmental issues come from that source, and sometimes there are the people who are employed by the Natural History Survey and other bodies that are here in central Illinois. So Fran gave a rundown on what is happening at the state level. One of the things is stewardship. And stewardship is an attempt to get to have people who are donating land, but it costs. You just can't donate land without realizing that there is also a cost to keeping it afloat. And that relates to the cost of fencing it, the cost of herbiciding invasive trees, the cost of doing the public relations of what you have. You need a parking lot. You need to know how to work with the plants so that you preserve them. You may have to remove endangered species. These are all heavy costs. And so Fran was talking about that. And then there was Jennifer Walling. And Jennifer Walling is in charge of the Illinois Environmental Council. If you go back probably 40 years, there was an Illinois Environmental Association, and it dealt with every environmental issue from school teaching to getting legal documents through. That split so that it now is the teaching part of it is the AEI. It's the Illinois Environmental Education Association, AEI, Illinois Environmental Education Association. And the other part is the Environmental Council, which deals with legal issues and is in there at Springfield watching what goes on with environmental issues. So Jennifer Walling is a graduate from the University of Illinois, was active when she was here, and is in charge of that, and she speaks loudly and clearly to what we, what has been done and what might be done. And so that is sort of information that we enjoy to receive. Then we had a whole bunch of speakers that I really respect for. They're doing things on a shoestring often. One of the topics was engaging people with social media. So what do you do with Facebook and other items like that? It was very interesting that people from the like of Open Lands Project, which is an advisory body in the Chicago area, which gets to give advice on planning and issues, and is very instrumental. It's sort of behind the scenes. It's not got a power play in a voting behavior as a council people. It's advisory, but they've been looking at social media, and it's kind of amazing that things have changed some. You have people who will vote in the Chicago area, then you need to know whether it's male or female. Who does this? What areas of interest are represented? How do you work with media? And we'll say a little bit about that later, because it came up again, and it's rather intriguing to know that people are watching Twitters and other things like this. It's axiomatic that visual material is tremendously important. Young people especially are not reading a lot, not listening a lot, but it's the visual material is tantamount to getting your message across. So you need one line of statement and a very impressive picture. So media is of interest. There's a need for people to be trained in certain things like trust. I have to say that we're at Heartland Pathways not well versed in easements, and the legal paraphernalia goes along with preserving natural areas, and you can very easily lose your natural area if you don't have your heads on straight. And so that to me is something where you might need a special workshop to get people who are interested in donating, people who are interested in working with the donated sites, people working with cities and councils and counties and state to make preservation happen. And one of those things that does make it happen is a fairly new phenomenon in the last 20 years, GIS, Geographic Information Services, is coming into action. And so David Holman is an expert at doing this, and he has been mapping and also reporting on quite a few things that help people understand what is going on. There was someone speaking about wind turbines, and wind turbines take a lot of land underneath the turbine. Can you plant prairie under the wind mills, and as we passed them in the rain, they looked very ghostly, just a background of pouring rain. When we came back, they were very well defined, and they've been modernized in the last 10 years. I think the rotors have gotten larger, and they are more vertical than they used to be. They used to be horizontal more. So, and these take up whole areas that are morainic. You can tell when you're going up the hill, and on the top of the hill, there's a moraine, and there's where you can capture a wind coming across the country. And there are the grids that we need to connect those windmills and turbines. I was in Lincoln Square, and I was tempted to say hi through the window to someone who was probably knew who I was waving to me. So I went in to say, I wish you could be a human turbine. You could run your gymnastic machine to produce electricity instead of just heat. It has to be taken out with an air conditioner. He laughed, and so I went on with my other interests in the mall. There was someone talking about well health and how important it is to have people out in nature. And there's beginning to be a good slab of research associated with what it's like to take someone who is having mental problems that may not actually be real. They're sort of because they're enslaved to being indoors and in light situations that are artificial. And you take those people out and you give one group of equivalent people traditional facility that they have, and take another group and invite them to be in a forest, to be in the company of these small biochemicals that you don't even know, that you might be able to smell the forest different, that you might be interested in the understory. So well health is something that we should think about when you're encouraging people to preserve a natural area. You might remind them that well health is rather important. It might be quite serious in some cases. Hospital is a hospital in Belleville that has a rail trail that runs very near, and they have it designated for heart people to restore their equanimity by going and taking exercise on a certain amount of this trail, and it's marked for what sort of patients might be wanting to do what. And so there's a very practical interest there, but there's also this diffuse interest of just sitting on the edge of a pond and thinking about the plants that are there. It was rather a wonderful talk about the biology of the native species. People generally don't know their prairie species. They haven't seen it for six generations. If it gets to be in downtown, it gets to be a non-entity in the fact that it's not a cultivar or an interesting body of roses or what have you. It's smaller and perennial and green, and it dies in the winter and doesn't look as well manicured as a plot of ground where the leftover plants are removed in August or September, and it's barren over winter. That's sort of part of well health, to have a nook or a niche that you can enjoy local scenery. So the botanist has been going around the state, and he had a visual presentation that showed you the species and perhaps the dominant feature of that species. It might be a certain type of leaf or certain type of pollination or a color or a botanically scientific family connection that also might be up for grabs as we look at genomes and find that sometimes the categorization of a plant might be different than what we thought it was. So he's got these maps, and so if the plant is, or some animals are in very small amount in Illinois, they might be a huge amount in the south, because the southern part of the state is very damp, and cypress and things like that are there, cypress ponds, and then for the north, the opposite is the case. And there are some glaciated areas that we have been talking about, and in those glaciated areas you might have a particular species that is rather wonderful. And so he had, I suspect he had probably 200 slides, and that was not too much. That gives you a feeling for what your state is about. It's a very, very interesting state. It runs from southern biota to northern biota, which is more like what you get in Canada. And then you have to impinge on that continental glaciation and moraines and outwash plains, so that you have dry and gravelly areas and wet and swampy areas. So we have probably more plants and animals that we have preserved in Illinois in little plots. They're mostly in little plots because the land is very rich. It depends some on the glaciers that came. The Wisconsin glacier is more fertile than perhaps the Illinoisan or other glaciers that came before it. So certain parts of the state that have been eroded by impoundment of water behind glaciers that suddenly broke loose in rivers that where they went through territory and exposed the underlying granite or limestone or whatever you have underneath. So you have skeletal plants that can live on very little. And then you go to southern Illinois, you have sometimes Ozark uplifts and interesting geology. So this is what we were hearing about, and rather wonderful to get that experience from a botanist who's a contractor to do work in natural areas that might be a part of the Natural History Survey or State Department of Natural Resources or the Department of Transportation. And so we have a few people around who are consultants. Some are people who have retired, like Jerry Paulson has been director of an institute that does this sort of work, and in retirement he can be very helpful in this sort of meeting and in consulting with people who are very genuine, but we don't always know what we're talking about. So those consultants are very, very helpful. Then we had some history, and I think this is important to people to know where your natural resources came from. So you go back to Teddy Roosevelt and the early preservation of natural resources in the West, especially. But then you come to a group of people who grew up After World War One and over the depressing years of the 30s and the war era and the return of people who came back to a land that used to be horses and cattle to realize that development was possible. They'd driven a tank or other equipment, and they were prepared to go to roads. So we had a huge involvement with roads and development. Those soldiers married, had families, and there was development. So we had a different era there in the 40s and the early 50s and the 60s. So there's history, and Guy Frecker is an attorney who grew up in the Bloomington area and was an attorney that was bitten by the biological bug and became a very fine representative of our prairie plants and animals. And he's been on the Illinois Nature Preserves Commission and then was chairman of the Nature Preserves Commission and a leader in this state. But he was wanting to honor other leaders that have been involved, and that was helpful to get something from someone who actually knew these people who mostly have passed on, like Bob Betts, who went around and worked on cemeteries. He discovered that some cemeteries had not been destroyed by mowing. They had original soils, and even if there was mowing, you might find a thread of some creature growing near a tombstone. Unfortunately, some of those cemeteries are then herbicided because it's easier to sow herbicide around a tombstone than to go around it with a mower. And the mowers also break down the tombstones so that you get to be a very sterile cemetery. But if there's been especially if there's been, like Loda, a reservation for future burials and it's loaded with prairie, then you might want to do something about that. So Bob Betts went around and did that. And there are all sorts of other people who have done the same sorts of things. So we had a lecture on that sort of thing. We then had a talk about George Fell. And that was interesting, and if I get enough time at the end, I'll say something about George Fell, because he and his wife Barbara were essential in creating a sort of a movement to preserve nature, and they did it on a shoestring, and so there's a history there. So the author of a book that says The Force of Nature, and it's by Arthur Melville Pearson. Pearson is the name to remember. It's basically about George Fell, the founder of the Natural Areas Movement. And so he has spent a number of years looking into files at the University of Illinois and archives, looking into the Natural History Survey, knowing the people that worked with George. And if I get time, I'll expand on that a little later. Then we had a strategic action plan. How do you encourage the board itself to upgrade itself? So they've employed two people who are experts in bringing together boards. And so they were there, but they called up the board itself, and they encouraged people to take on one particular aspect of the commitment, because if it's general and diffuse and it has no leadership, it kind of dies. And so we were told which board members had which responsibility, and those people who had those responsibilities could come up to the microphone and tell us what they had been doing already and what they might do. And in that whole spectrum of action plans, there's a beg for the people who are in the audience to be involved, to actually stand up and be counted for what they believe and what they might want to see happen. And sometimes it's quite uniform. You believe it, you think you're different because you don't know what the other person thinks. And so bringing the people together like this often gives the people involved a chance to share each other's interest. And that's what this whole meeting was about. There's 60 or 70 people. Some of them are oscillating in and out, but amongst them there are a bunch of nabobs who have been doing this sort of stuff for years, and we should know those people. Going to a banquet or a meal after and sitting in lockstep with new board members or people who have done a lot of conservation work with rivers or sand dunes or what have you, you get to hear some of the stories and what has happened now. So some of us who have been for several years to this meeting will want to ask what happened to the site that was on the edge of a pond and was a garage and sometimes got broken into and things like that. So we get a report, and you get it from someone who has a sense of humor about this. And so where were the Indiana bats, and how did they survive? And a tornado came through and took out the ramp for getting into the river and took down a whole bunch of trees. And so this is good. And he is also a person, Ali is his name, and he knows how to roam around with a microphone. One of the meanest things of these meetings is that you get someone to say something very quickly and you can't hear it. So either the MC has to repeat the question or the comment, or there has to be a microphone there. And so the Prairie State Conservation Coalition is very good at getting that microphone right to the person. Then you have to make sure that they know they have to almost eat their microphone in order for it to work properly. There's no point in, if you're one of these people that moves around like I do, or the old timer at WEFT used to do, you turn around and talk to someone and the microphone is at the back of your head. This is not good. We have to convince people. And I was talking to Sandy, who is the one paid person for the Prairie State Conservation Coalition, and she has a background in media, and she also knows when microphones aren't working. If you have a microphone and you suddenly decide that your voice is quite good enough for everyone to hear and they can't really hear it, you put the microphone down near your navel and gesticulate as you want with the microphone included, but it's not very good for people to hear. And so they do very well with that, with people sitting at tables where you don't. It occupies a lot of space. So especially if you have a room where there's a air conditioner or a heater that breaks down the sound. So The strategic action plan has not been set in concrete. The strategic action plan is asking for participant involvement, and that takes talent to bring people together. So you need that contracted group of two people who can bounce off each other and also bounce off the board and come and be involved. Then there were easements. George Covington is a legal gem. He is also one of these people who have committed himself to nature, and he's an expert in tax. He's a lawyer, and he's also on. He's the chair of the Illinois Nature Preserves Commission, and he delves into issues and. Things change, especially when the administration at the presidential level changes. You may have to change accordingly. So George was talking about easements, and I'm not very on top of easements. I know that we have titles that range from warranty deeds to warranty easements to condemnations to adverse possessions. That's a range of easements. They mean that in one case, warranty deed, the land was sold to a railroad, for instance. The railroad owns it, has the right to sell it. A warranty easement is a very strong suggestion that the railroad has the right of way as long as the railroad is running, but that may include reversionary deeds that where the agency that lent the land gets it back. And then there are condemnations where the landowner was very reluctant to allow the railroad to go through the territory, and so it goes before the judge, and the judge has to say that this is important for the general public, and I'm going to suggest that you accept the appraised price of this land, and we would like to take it over. Those people get that land back when the railroad goes out. And then there's adverse possessions, where you go across a corner and it's 15 feet, and you didn't ever bother to have your paralegals to sort on that. Well, those are sort of things that go back to the local owner too. So we actually are often in jeopardy for losing land to those sorts of titles. We're losing a 30-mile railroad bed in the Arcola area, basically, because of that sort of turnover. And the fact that there's not been anyone to really challenge the idea that we are down to 0.01% of the remnant prairies preserved. And that includes the soils. Most all of our soils are chemicalized, so the only soils we really have are in those cemeteries or in railroad right-of-ways that haven't been invaded. And even those sites are somewhat disturbed. The only soils we have that have been undisturbed are samples in bottles preserved by the agronomy department at the University of Illinois. They involved Cyril Hopkins, who was an early soil mapping person who didn't get respect from the federal agriculture people, but came to the Illinois and was accepted as a soil mapping person, and is very famous for doing that sort of leadership, a little bit like George Fell, doing something that was rather different, that eventually has become part of our establishment science. So George is dealing with easements, and and what sort of easements, and what can you do with an easement, and what can the landowner do if there's an easement for nature? Does the landowner get to live or be associated with the easement, and what can they do? And that also involves stewardship. And so there was a discussion of stewardship and what you can do with an easement, and what can you do with stewardship? Can the state help you to provide the fences and the parking lots and the invasive plant removal and things like that? So they're looking for a bill, and this is where Prairie State Conservation Coalition and all those cooperative people get together, and they are likely to get some respect from both sides of the aisle. People do want to conserve. And George Fellows in there, so we'll talk about him in a little later if I have time. We're getting to the end. There was Brooke McDonald has been a chairperson of the Prairie State Conservation Coalition, and he wanted to say that, believe it or not, but a lot of people, conservative or otherwise, are interested in preserving nature. So don't assume or conclude that it's too hard to do because no one will do it. And he had a list of all the ring counties in Chicago area that have had support, billions of dollars of support for natural areas, and he wants you to know that you can encourage that to happen. He had a fun deal. He does a lot of fundraising, and some of that involves looking at words and looking at media. And so don't use the word ecology or ecosystem, because it's not always well understood. So he has a dictionary of things you shouldn't say in certain circles, and you pick your circle. If it's inner suburbs Chicago, it's different from outer suburbs Chicago. It's different from downstate Illinois. It's different from farming communities. So you need to know your community and to adapt your language accordingly, and adapt the way you reach out for people. And that's a problem for us, because we're in the middle of East Central Illinois, where the soils are absolutely the best in the world, and there's money in those soils. So every inch that we argue about is of concern. It's difficult to do. I've just recently been talking to someone who has taken land that was corn and soybeans and put it into nature, and so you then have the trees grow, but there's the shrubs that grow, there's the understory herbs that grow, and then you have to look at places like Allerton, where they're beginning to mow the areas under the trees with a huge front end mower. And these days you have to wonder whether the person behind the mower knows where the trees are that are significant. In the era when you went around with a chopper, you could recognize the red bud or the whatever you have, whether it's a honeysuckle that you want to get rid of. So it gets to be a little dangerous if you're going to blanket move into a natural area. So conferences, though, realize that people in general, conservatives included, very strongly interested in quality of life. Go back to that lady that was talking about well health and nature. These people want well health too, and they also want to hand natural areas onto their generations and great-grandchildren, and that's rather important. So you have places like Lodge Park where you can go visit and enjoy nature that wouldn't be there unless these families, the Lodge family, hadn't done that. And so he's saying, yes, it happens, and be confident it can happen. There were people who were saying it was fundraising that they put food into the action. They had a big fork, and they were using a gimmick to raise funds. And so that was interesting, and but very successful, because it took people to sites, and it took them to food that might come from that sort of association. Someone was saying, "Watch your tax sales. When people can't afford to pay their taxes, they go into a pool, and entrepreneurs can come in and buy the tax. And if you're lucky, you can buy your tax base back. You can buy your property back. But if no one comes forth to challenge you, the person who goes to the auction and guarantees to buy that plot of land, they can do it." And wow, we're getting up there. So watching tax signs is good. Deanna Glosser, who had she's CEO of a local trust, and they got money for a levee trail that is rather behind Allerton Park, and the levee allowed people to work the territory simply in the day. They would put in the levee, and then they would have a pump to pump out the water, and then they'd plant corn and soybeans. So that was involved mitigation, restoring the land to the trees. So there was a show and tell to finish up, and show and tell was, what have we done that's exciting? Where did funds come from that we didn't expect? And then there were the people who took 40 years to acquire a site that they'd been interested in. There were people who actually lost out. And so telling people about their activities is very, very good.